ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 23 of Capes and Commentaries. I'm your co-host, Nathan Kennedy, here with Tyler Baker. And Tyler, we're heading back to Gotham for the first time in quite a while. And apologies that we didn't have an episode for you last weekend, but that was the only time I could go see Halloween, so we had to squeeze that in for this show someday. But we're here this week. We're going to be talking Bane, which I did some research, and apparently this is really the only episode that he is prominently featured in, which I thought was kind of surprising.
In the first three seasons, where it's like Batman, before they did like the whole revamp, and he's not featured in a whole lot of episodes in the Gotham Knights series. When they revamped and retooled all the looks and stuff. Yeah, he's not in it as much. And he appears in the Superman animated series in one episode, too.
It's just kind of funny because he's prominently featured on the box art and everything, but it's just like one and done here. And I thought that was kind of interesting because once again, the only interpretation of the character I feel that they have gotten right. He's terrible in Batman and Robin, and some would argue his portrayal in the Nolan films. I feel like by now most people kind of have our opinions on that, that those movies to us don't really hold up.
No, they don't
stand the test of time. But also, Tyler, did you see that Bane is going to be in that Gotham show?
Yeah, and it just continues to show. I'll never, ever watch that Gotham show because I've never gotten my head around the idea of these shows where they want to do a superhero show where nobody looks like a superhero or a supervillain. It's just guys in civilian clothes, street clothes, and they deem themselves, I'm the Joker because I've just smeared lipstick on my face, and I'm a street-level guy, and I'm causing chaos with no Batman in the city or something like that. I don't like the idea of those kinds of shows. That's why I'm not a fan of Smallville. I gave Smallville a chance. I just could not get into it.
Yeah,
and Gotham I thought was a lame idea. I'm not interested in seeing a show about Batman's world without Batman in it and confronting the villains. I'm not compelled to watch a show based on Commissioner Gordon. He's just not as fascinating, I think, as people. I mean, there's a lot of like uncorrupted cops and characters in a lot of superhero shows or comic books, excuse me. So even though he's one of the first, I read or watch Batman for Batman. I don't read it for the cop. It's he's a good man. Like, I don't care. I want to watch superheroes and supervillains.
Right.
If I want to watch that, I can watch, you know, Miami Vice and watch good cops kicking butt and right. And it's just not interesting. Plus Donald Logue's in it and Jada Pinkett Smith. I'm like, that's just not good. But I know it has a fan base, but
kicking butt,
kicking ass.
There you go. Come on.
Yeah.
But I mean, you'll be happy to know that when I was reading the articles, it said fifth and final season.
Yeah.
So I guess that's finally coming to a close. Which...
Yeah, I heard that this was going to be, but they're also doing an Alfred Pennyworth show too.
Why? Like what?
Because apparently the world must have a show about Batman's butler and his, and they're trying to have characters, you know, in his world too. I'm like,
it's reaching that point. The superhero bubble it's going to burst. It has to, because they're coming up with these stupid just ideas. Like, I don't want to see a show about Alfred. Like, that makes no sense to me. Like, yes, he is strictly kind of background. He's there to give advice. He's there to move the story along sometimes, but he does not need to be a central focus.
No, a lot just because they're a great side character or supporting cast member in a in-depth, very rich and detailed comic book mythology. Like, they don't want to have their own show. That's why it was never for a lot, like S.H.I.E.L.D. having their own show. I'm like, dude, I've never ever as a child cared for Nick Fury or S.H.I.E.L.D. in general. They're the government agency of the Marvel Universe. And I knew what the show was going to be. It was guys walking around in suits and more civilians claiming to be superheroes without actually being superheroes. And they throw Ghost Rider in or something like that. And I don't think that was as well received or did as much for the show. But it's just, I'm sorry. I don't, I have to have people in the suits. Comic book or superheroes and supervillains, that part of them is their visual look. And I'm not going to support anything that's just a guy in civilian clothes and a hoodie. He's a cool street level superhero because he wears a hoodie and he carries it over his head. He lurks and mopes in the back alleys. And no, you guys don't get it at all. So I'm glad some people can find joy in it, but it's not for me.
Right.
But I will say, like, this is by far, like, the animated series in terms of entertainment value has got Bane the best. They've done the best with him. They got his voice right, his look right in both this one and the retooled look.
The retooled look of Bane, I'm not, like most of them, you and I have talked about this before, I'm not a huge fan of that design.
I'm fine. I mean, I would pick this one over that one, but I do like the other one because I feel like he's still very sinister. It's not like it's. I mean, they maintain their same personality, so nothing changed there. I think the worst offender for me was the Joker because he didn't have as much color in his face; it was just white with lines, and I hated that as a kid. Oh man, it drove me nuts. I've since come around to appreciate it a lot more because the character is still there. Mark Hamill still delivers. The stories are great.
But it does sort of just offset you a little bit. It kind of like, so, whoa, all right.
Yeah, but, I wasn't a fan because I just felt like a lot of it lost a lot of color and look. Two-Face still looked probably the best of it. And Scarecrow's redesign was badass, too. Oh, boy, that was great. What's his name? Reanimator. Jeffrey Combs doing the voice, which was like, oh, this is great, man. This is so cool. But I know why. Essentially, it was the one episode too, because at the time, you know, Nightfall was going on in the comic books, and this came out, you know, after all of that had gone down.
Pretty quickly after that too. So, like a quick turnaround for the character. That was kind of I kind of look at that as like the golden age of Batman. I don't think anything's ever going to touch that. You know, the 89 movie comes out, the comic stories are kind of really hitting their stride. And then here comes the animated series and it's all just like flowing and kind of going off one another, so to speak. And I don't think that'll ever be topped.
Yeah. I guess just so comic book fans don't get mad, Nathan's not talking about the comic books. But just the presence of Batman in our culture, where Batman was so popular at that time, and yes, he did come back when the Dark Knight came back out. And you really thought it was going to be like the summer of Batman again. To a certain extent, it kind of was, but nowhere near like the magic of '89. It's not even the same league or universe. But yeah, for the Batman and Batman Returns, the animated series, the 60s show was back in syndication on TV at the time. Video games are out.
Yeah, I think the only reason I did kind of bring up the comic books is because to me, during this time is when I really got into picking up more Batman books. So maybe the stuff that I was reading at the time was kind of like further back than I'm thinking. But to me, it was new. So,
I guess what I was saying is, like, because I know every fan has got their favorite probably decade or time of stories. I mean, whether it be for Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, the Avengers, Daredevil, whatever the case may be. But I like with Batman, you know, like the 70s gave him a more edgier feel with Neil Adams and Denny O'Neill. And then, of course, in the 80s when Dark Knight Returns came out and things like that. So I guess it just depends on what you like. But I completely see where you're going for in that. I look at it as probably like the biggest and most exciting time to be a Batman fan was in the early 90s, right after the movie came out, because then Batman was so accessible from action figures and video games. Comic book stores were plentiful back then, so you could see Batman or any other superhero relatively easily at the time. X-Men was on, Spider-Man was on. It was just a fun time to be a comic book fan in general. Whether you like DC or Marvel, everything was so accessible at any store. I mean, I guess to a certain extent it is now. But
I would disagree with that strictly because, comic books were in grocery stores, 7-Eleven.
Well, I meant like with toys and stuff like comic books. No, by far, no. It's dead as far as I'm concerned in terms of like mass marketing. To be able to go to Food Lion or 7-Eleven, or any convenience store that you pass through in America, or comic book store, specialty shops. I mean, We used to have two downtown Radford, one down from where Nathan used to live. There was one in Blacksburg.
Shout out to LT's Cards, man.
Yes, which I had a lot of fun going to that.
Oh, man, it was so cool. Just as like, all right, I'm walking to LT's. And my mom was just like, all right, go through there. And I still have stuff. We may have talked about this before, but when they had Batman and Judge Dredd.
Oh, yeah. I remember that crossover.
I got a poster from that, which honestly, I love the art on that thing. I should probably dig it out, find it, frame it, hang it on the wall, do something with it, because that's just it's a beautiful piece of work. And then I got that huge ass Robin poster for when he got like his solo book. And I was like really excited about that at the time. But yeah, in terms of action figures, Kenner had it down, man. They really did.
Well, except for all the variants, though. Which, well, even as a kid, like when Animated Services, I'm like, I'd see all these like goofy variants, and when all the movies were coming out, it was some of the variants I didn't mind from Batman and Batman Returns. But then when Batman Forever came, I'm like, oh man, some of these variants are just, you know, what's wrong with just having the black suit and the yellow and black emblem, and that's it? It's just all these like goofy bright colors and stuff. And
that's Schumacher for you.
Well, the Animated Series had its fair share of silly, you know, gimmicks and variants. I mean, you had plenty of the villains, but you also had tons and tons and tons of, you know, Polar Attack or Ice Attack Batman and Night, you know, Streaking Batman. And
I do like how even as kids, you and I both sort of were just like, on the variants.
Well, yeah, it's like I hate that that's how all these toy companies, like, you know, they want Batman, but they just feel like, okay, well then just give us Batman, give us He-Man, give us Snake Eyes. Don't release it in some goofy bright colored variant because you think we're dumb enough to, like, I gotta have the neon colored Batman for Christmas, Mom. And then a relative gets it for you because you just, oh, he likes Batman, just get him something Batman. And
you get the
worst variant possible, and you're like, oh, you just throw it to the side.
I mean, it's no Troll Doll Ninja Turtles on your birthday, that's for sure. Mm. Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah, there was no way they could market those. Where I'm like, I
wonder, you know what? Now that I think about it, I wonder if those things are actually like kind of rare or pricey.
No,
you never know.
Well, there's a bunch of turtle variants that, you know, dude, you can look them up on eBay. They're dirt cheap because they're variants like, you know, the Farmer Mike or the Chief Leo or the Cowboy Don or the Basketball Don or Basket Raff or the, you know, the Davy Crockett version of Raphael. I mean, just silly variants that, you know, I mean, unless you're an avid collector, you should have no trouble getting those. I mean, it's those first few waves of action figures and the last wave that won't get the most in vehicles and stuff like that too. But people aren't asking for ridiculous amounts of money for the, you know, Farmer Mike and his tractor. I mean, I feel sorry for the kid that got that for his birthday or a surprise gift from his aunt or something like that. You're like, oh, this is great. Like George Kennedy, a cupcake in Naked Gun 3. You're like, you know, you're just like, get it away from me. You know, but Batman was no exception because I would see the commercials and I was just like, I just want Batman and the villains. I just, you know. I hate that they always felt that we got to have tons and tons and tons of Batman, but not the one that you would want. The one that's featured in the show, not the, you know, you never saw variants of those goofy versions of Batman showing up in the show. He never, never used any of that stuff. So, but anyway, I remember when this episode aired, I remember watching the commercial for it and watching it when it came on, thinking they were actually going to show or hoping the breaking of Batman. Like, because because they go so far with it to really look like he's going to do it. And even though as a kid, I'm like, I don't know if they'll actually show him being, if Bane's actually going to break his back. And then when you watch it, they're like, and then no. And I was disappointed because
it's a good tease, though.
It was a good tease, and it's still the best interpretation of the character that I think we've gotten based on anything else we've got in terms of animation. I used to wish that they would do the Nightfall storyline in an animated film, but the way DC like has done a lot of films, and after Killing Joke, like that's it. They're not getting any more of my money. I'm not being duped in anything else that DC animated does anymore.
Well, I wouldn't even say I would like just DC as a whole, honestly.
Yeah.
Like they're toast. Like they're done.
They're done. They suck. And they show no signs of getting any better with their upcoming movies or their streaming service or all this stuff. I'm like, it's, you know, maybe it's for people who just eat, sleep, and breathe DC, and that's fine.
And I mean, there's those people out there. And if you guys enjoy that stuff, it's cool. But I mean, just what the fuck, man?
Yeah.
Like they just really dropped the ball. Like I understand we have to catch up to Marvel, but come on, man! Like
Marvel had to take their time. It wasn't
exactly
like they just jumped right out of the gate with it. And of course, they're not careful too. I mean, they're just gonna blow up in their face. But not when people keep thinking it's all right to watch comedies instead of superhero movies. But we all know that. And I'm not treating our listeners to that same rant again.
Well, but before we go ahead and dive into this, if you guys are new, go ahead and hit subscribe and ring the bell so you get notified when a new video goes up or when we go live. And there is a link down below this time. So if you guys want to give that a click, you'll have to just scroll a bit because I think it's got like episodes at the top. Scroll down, hit play, and you guys can watch along with us. So without further ado, Tyler's prey. He's got his chapstick on. He's ready to roll. So yep. whenever you're ready, sir, give us a countdown and we'll get it going.
All right. 3, 2, 1, action.
This intro does not hold the same gravitas.
No, it doesn't. It's a little, even though you got a lot of like action images, it just does not have that same magic as just the solo. I mean, they obviously it's a mix of it, you know, of the original opening and this new amalgam of various images and things like that. But it's just not as, plus the music, it's a different. I just the music's fine, but it's too low key. You know, the original Danny Elfman score, you know, from the first two seasons, it just constantly sets the tone. This just kind of, it doesn't match the images. I feel like it's too downbeat.
Right.
It's heroic, but just not as exciting, and just kind of ends like. Well, I like the way it ends like that. But
it's an awesome title card right there.
It is. And I remember over the years too, like, because, you know, I feel like the 90s was like the last bit of introducing villains that were going to be staples in the mythology of superheroes. You know, with Superman and Doomsday, you got Bane with Batman, Carnage with Spider-Man, just to name a couple of examples that are heavy hitters today. But back then, they were the new kids on the block and given a whole lot of publicity. Like for Bane, a new character comes in and breaks Batman. Doomsday comes in and kills Superman. Carnage comes in. And it's carnage, 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 carnage. So I know some people may not look at a lot of these villains that came out in the 90s as like anything great, but they came out when I was really getting into comic books.
It was an exciting time.
It was. Plus, Bane's visual is just like, I mean,
you can see it right here when he got out of the plane, just like how massive he is. And, showing when he gets in the vehicle that
like
how much weight he's putting on it. It's a good way to establish characters. Like, come on.
Just how alpha he is before he even gets into action here, that he's wearing a suit and the image, like, you don't see his face just yet, or it's not as prominent. And I love his voice.
And I love how he's wearing a suit, and we'll see later on how Killer Croc, who appears in this episode, is also wearing
Coat and a hat and the fedora hat. Yeah,
that's the beauty of the show, and we've said it a bunch. Like, it's got a modern feel, but it also has that throwback to like
the 1930s gangster.
Yeah. Come on, DC. Like, how hard is it to make a live action version of any of this? You got it all right here. Just do it.
And I actually
don't do it because you'll fuck it up.
Yeah, they'll screw it up too. It's been done perfectly with this show. So you know what? As much as we say it would be great, and it would be, but you know what? The people currently making the decisions for DC and Warner Brothers in terms of like animation and entertainment, don't know their head from the hole, you know, or their ass from a hole in the ground, or however the phrase is. Point is, they don't know what they're doing, so leave it alone.
Right.
But I think introducing Bane in this way, because obviously this is not how he's brought in the comics, I don't believe, from what I can remember. It's been a while since I've read them. But this is strictly setting, bringing Bane in a way that like with Rupert Thorne, hiring him as opposed to, you know, Bane being or coming out and kind of doing things on his own, so to speak, in the comics. But obviously using Killer Croc, so they maintain a lot of elements from the Nightfall storyline, into what's already established in this animated universe here. And it really breaks your heart to feel like this show got Bane so perfectly, in that, you know, you could look at what Nolan did, which initially I thought was going to be quite good, even though I've never been a fan of Tom Hardy. And after seeing Venom recently, it just continues to hammer that idea home.
Yeah, I think that's something that we need to bring up on Beyond Retro tomorrow, quick. We'll get your hot take on that.
Oh, man. Tomorrow. I tell you, yeah. But I love the voices of Bane and Killer Croc so much on this show. And this is how I like seeing all these villains being depicted. Like, a lot of times they work solo, but it's cool to see Killer Croc running a gang. You know, he's dressed up like a gang. Even though he's still running around barefoot, but he looks like a gangster right now. I mean, a very formidable gangster. And of course, by the numbers here, Batman's on his trail here with Robin, and this is what we like to see. And I just felt like they took the main big elements of the Bane storyline and it all gets incorporated into this 22-minute episode. And it just goes to show you that. And I often wondered too, that when Bane was introduced, and I don't know if the staff was like, hey, we should do a Bane episode, or if they were asked to do Bane because Bane was currently in the comic books at the time.
I imagine that they probably were like, hey, we're gonna do this. Just because
you know, Bane was new, these guys want to celebrate the old villains. Are they interested in pushing somebody that, you know what, was brought in and was given the keys to the kingdom, so to speak, to be such a dominant villain? As opposed to, like, why wouldn't the Joker be the one to do this to Batman? Not physically, but to essentially put Batman out of action permanently for quite a while, or to Mr. Freeze, or to the Riddler, or I guess, you know, physically.
To me, I would see them, like, jumping at the opportunity immediately, because why not? Like, that gives you another character to work with, and this is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
It just punches through the pipe. This is honestly probably one of my favorite parts of this episode.
And I do like, because in the comic he breaks Croc's arm, and you see his arm in a sling when he's in jail. And I just love, like, it's clearly implied that Bane broke his arm too. And again, this was a show, they didn't shy away from punches and kicks and seeing people being smacked around and stuff like that, because, yeah, you can't do a Batman show where people are not being punched and stuff. And I'm glad that was never a scare when it came to doing a animated. I mean, most of the superhero, even Spider-Man back then, like, you know, people got punched and stuff, and it's not like we can't show that, because that was definitely wasn't always the case in cartoons. You know, G.I. Joe did it prominently, and I think Transformers did too, and various other cartoons. But it's just, you know, these guys got it, and it's a shame that the animation in DC releases just clearly don't have it. And I own enough of them to feel like, you know what, I don't like what I see, I don't like what I blind bought, so I'm not giving them any more of my money.
And also, this was very awesome. He, like, beat the shit out of the Batmobile with his fists.
Just building up, like, not waiting around for Batman, but making a statement and waiting. Like, I love that about Bane. Like, a solo villain. See, look at that. I like this interrogation sequence. I'll show you firsthand. It's just fun seeing our heroes tampering with the dark side with the villains, you know, not all of them do it, but like Batman, Wolverine, the Punisher, Daredevil, won't hesitate to crack a few bones to get the answers they want. And Spider-Man will do it too, at least in my opinion. But seeing that mentality in a children's show.
Yeah, they certainly don't make them anymore like they used to. That's for
sure. No, because there's so much care and attention put into all these. I mean, this interrogation, I could see this in a movie. You know, everything. I mean, in a 2-hour film, I'm sure this would have been stretched out a bit more. All of this, the conversation with Croc, the fight in the sewers, you know, finding out who Bane is, like all this, like Batman finding out Project Gilgamesh. I mean, all of this is thrown in very quickly here, but you buy it. But in a movie, you know, we would see Batman doing a little detective work, finding out about what happened and, you know, a little bit more detail. And I mean, because this has to be to the point. It's for kids, especially if kids were not familiar with the comics at the time. But something that if you were reading the comics at the time, you definitely could buy into all of this with some of the changes that had to be made, of course. And it's fun having a Batman. I mean, because a lot of Batman's rogues galleries, they're not as formidable strength-wise. You know, Killer Croc's up there, but with the Joker, the Penguin, the Riddler, Two-Face, Mr. Freeze, of course, current Mr. Freeze, I think would be a little bit more different in that regard. But Batman doesn't have a whole lot of villains that are is physically a match for him, so to speak.
And that the Blu-ray set is coming out here in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to decide if I need it, if I want to get it in its current set, or if they'll like re-release it. Because I, once again, I'm still not a fan of like the packaging and the way that they went about it. I'd rather just have them in cases, like snapped in there, and not like in the booklet form.
I like the booklet because that's how my Alien quadrilogy is in, and I like that form. It's pretty nice. But I probably won't get it right now because I don't know if I could afford that at once. If I could do payments, I could definitely get it. But I thought I was going to be able to afford it, but I'm like, I may have to wait till after Christmas because sometimes I get money for Christmas. I might have to put it towards that. Because if I ask for it, everyone's going to ignore me. Like with the Batman 60 show. The only thing I asked for when that came out, the only thing I want, and nobody got it for me.
So you had to go out the next day and pick it up.
The next day and spend all the money I got for Christmas to get, because I wanted the whole set at once. And my brother asked about it, my girlfriend at the time. I told my mom. Everybody was asking me, would you like that for Christmas? And not a single person got it for me. I was like, man, worst Christmas ever.
Phil Collins playing in the background.
Yeah, with Sludge McDonald's ice cream. And just seeing this detective work, you know, Robin working on his own here, and of course we'll get caught. That's just like seeing that storyboard, like Bane running in the shadows.
And all you see is just like his shadow and the red eyes.
It's awesome. And Bane's look, yes, we get the joke. He looks like a luchador. But, I mean, as a kid, it didn't occur to me. And it's only like comes to my attention because some people are like, he looks like a wrestler. He looks like a luchador.
Well, I thought that was honestly kind of the cool thing about him, even as a kid. Like, he looks like a wrestler. I don't know. I always liked that about him.
Yeah, but, I mean, to me, that's the look. And I think it would have translated very well. I mean, and all honesty, too, like the Batman and Robin look, if Bane wasn't portrayed as for laughs and as like a mindless idiot, they did get the look, aside from the green skin and all that stuff, but he looked like Bane would look or should look, but, you know, was dumbed down. I mean, they hired a guy who physically looked like Bane. It's just a shame that they wasted the character as just a mindless drone as opposed to being the cold and calculating assassin that he is. And, you know, you're not going to hear me say too many positive things about Batman and Robin, but, you know, it's the execution that sucked poorly. I like Candace here being like the dame, the mall for the gangsters here, and she's got her eyes on Bane and trying to coax him into taking over Rupert Thorne's empire. Like, it's just fun. It's another like small storyline going on that she has her own agenda. Bane has his. Rupert has his.
And as we'll see, it's going to come back to bite her in the ass.
Yeah, as well as it should.
But I like this part right here coming up where he's just like, yeah, he just breaks the fucking window right here. Like, I love that. He's just like, yeah. All right, yep. And he just throws it and he's on his way. I enjoy the fact that he doesn't give a shit about her apartment at all.
No. She's pretty hot, though, because she's hanging out watching cartoons, man. And that's a beautiful woman. But, yeah, it's just fun to see heroes that they don't always stop to think about people's personal belongings. It's just, the hell with this. Don't even say send me the bill. And that's got to hurt so much for Robin to have that large weight. I like that, you know. That obviously, that could easily happen, but it's not about that to Bane. Like, it's the challenge. It's the... He just he's not a villain that, even though obviously they're not going to do it for the show, but his reasons behind it, which means that writers make it plausible that he's not someone. And a lot of times the villains, you know, obviously they're not going to, they'll hint at finding out the secret identity, and of course they're not going to. But I like Bane's reasons behind that. It makes it believable, not just as a kind of a quick little plot device to avoid the secret identity being foiled.
Does he kind of remind you of Kraven from Spider-Man in a way? Do you see a lot of similarities between the two? Or?
I mean, they're both hunters, but I would never... honestly, you're the first one to prepare to meet your master. That's so cool. I have never thought about comparing those two, but yes, they're... Kraven is strictly like a game hunter. Like, he's in it for strictly the challenge of being the alpha male, whereas Bane is, I feel like there's a little bit more to his reasoning of why he does what he does. Like, Kraven comes off as like the quintessential. This is cool. This
yeah,
is
a quick
little, yeah, the clothesline with the railings bending like wrestling ropes. So I thought it was just a fun little gag.
And Hurricane Rana's right here from
yeah,
that.
Yeah. And it looks good. The animation is so fluid.
Yeah. There's a choke
slam. Yeah. But I like the idea of that, but I clearly think Bane would beat Kraven, though, without a doubt.
I think unless
Bane was not given access to the Venom, but even then.
I think it would be a cool little like crossover, like comic book, like those two against each other. Or maybe even teaming up or something. I don't know.
That'd be kinda... see that because they've crossed over, you know, Spider-Man and Batman, you know, before, and it was Joker and Carnage. But if they were to do the story where you've got two hunters, and they kind of cross paths inadvertently because they're after the same thing, I could see them pretending to team up with no real intention of helping the other because they want the right to be victorious. They want to know that they're the alpha male. They're the more dominant villain. But yeah, because in that regard, yeah, Kraven's a lot like that. Like, I mean, so much where he puts both barrels of a shotgun into his mouth and blows his brains after he thinks he's, you know, successfully taken out Spider-Man. Which is a very interesting take on the character.
Yeah.
But that's a good storyline too. If you never read Kraven's Last Hunt, you need to do it. It's very, very good. The art's good in it too. But yeah, it's. I feel like, you know, because for some crossovers, you try to find villains that are that you could easily see crossing paths. But like in Superman and Spider-Man, it's Dr. Doom and Parasite instead of Lex Luthor and Dr. Doom. This is cool. Just seeing how angry Bane, and it just kicks Robin back in there. But Robin gets the fun job. He gets to wrestle a girl, you know. You know, she's going to slip her heels off here, make it all provocative, and then jump in on him. Like, I think I'll gladly take Robin's part right now. Like, he looks at her like, oh, man. just all this punching and kicking that we're going to see with Batman here and Bane, it's just, it looks so good. Breaking that, crushing it off his
head.
Well,
and they do a good job too, like when he's punching stuff to show the impact, when he's moving to, like, you feel the steps and.
Yeah. Toys. And the music just builds and builds. He's coming. It's just slapping Batman around. I mean, just, it's refreshing to see that. This is awesome.
Here we go.
Yep.
And you're just like, oh shit, they're gonna do it.
Oh, man, I was on pins and needles when I saw this as a kid. It's like, oh no.
And speaking of cool visuals,
yes, this could be argued as the most warped and nutty sequence in the animated series, period. I mean, with all the veins being shown here and just
right there.
Yeah. And the heartbeat, I mean, the blood pumping. I mean, they did not hold back for something that's going to be aired on a weekday afternoon here.
Now the truth's going to come out.
Yep. And of course, we get to see Batman looking as badass as possible.
Do you have any issues here with him being unmasked at all?
As a kid, I kind of felt like he didn't look as cool with the mask off. I'm like, eh, he looks like just a guy. You know, it's just kind of killed some of the mystery for me as a kid. But as an adult, I'm like, I had no problem with it at all. I mean, I have a different approach or what's the word? My viewpoint for a lot of these shows. Even the ones that I love, it's changed a little bit, but for the better. You know, it's not like I find problems. If anything, I appreciate more of what was changed or the direction they went in. I appreciate the things that they felt like they had to do or needed to do to make the transition to a 22-minute episode. So,
and speaking of 22 minutes, the episode's done. That was quick.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you're watching a good episode. They fly by, and it's, Lord knows, 1994, man. This episode is over 20 years old, man. I mean,
we're old, man.
I just never think of stuff in the 90s as being 20 years old. You know, it feels like the 90s was like the last decade.
Yeah.
Just shows you like how memorable the 2000s were. You know, it just, you know, there was. What could you say? Like, you ever think I don't think VH1's ever going to do, like, I love the 2000s.
They will. Yeah. Give them time.
Ugh. But that's our Bane episode. And, you know, just on this disc alone, like, the Harley Quinn, that'd be the next one I would want to do. Or, maybe with it being October, we did not do Scarecrow, but we did do one based on a man with a mask. So it's not like we were completely. Out of the Halloween spirit, but you know, we've yet to do a Scarecrow episode. We haven't done Two-Face. We did do Almost Got Him, but not a straight Two-Face episode. But like for next week, I mean, do we dare do X-Men again? Do we tackle another Batman? Do we tackle Justice League? Do we tackle Turtles again? Do we go to Spider-Man or G.I. Joe, Cops? You know, I picked this one. Do you have any ideas or something, not a permanent, but something you wouldn't mind going and revisiting or trying for the first time? Or, you know, we could even do, you know, I know we plan on doing the 89 live action film.
Yeah, that'll be coming up here in a couple weeks, actually.
Yeah, you know what? And I think in another future one, we'll have to do the Dick Tracy movie.
Okay.
Yeah, that'd be something we'd have to do in an upcoming episode. And maybe in December, we can do Batman Returns, you know, since that does take place at Christmas. You know, it'd be something we do for one episode. But we should definitely do Dick Tracy in the coming weeks. Batman Returns. But I don't know. I think I'll let you pick the next one we do.
All right. I'll spin the wheel and make the deal.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
It'll land on coal miner's glove.
Oh, so disappointing. Even as a kid, I'm like,
I saw that as a kid, I'm like, I have no idea what this is supposed to mean.
Yeah. Like, out of everything that you had, that's...
Yeah.
Ugh. Like, I would have just taken a fucking strap match or something over that.
Any gimmick was better than a coal miner's glove. I remember it was like some sort of Dusty Rhodes idea, too, I think, the whole coal miner's glove.
That sounds about right. Dusty had a lot of good ideas, but he also had a lot of bad ones, too.
And I remember hearing the reason behind the whole idea for that, not for the Sting match, but the whole, like, purpose of the coal miner's glove. It was supposed to be like a glove that, I guess... had something in it to make almost not like brass knuckles, but it felt like if you were to punch someone, that was like the glove itself was like a much more, I don't know. I felt like there was supposed to be, I can't remember if it was Cornette or somebody explained the reason behind the coal miner's glove. Cause they never explain it ever when anytime it's ever brought up. So when you watch it, especially in that Jake the Snake Roberts match where old Jake or Sting does is like hit him in the leg or something. And then Jake falls over with the cobra on his face and please bite me.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it's just like, I guess, good in theory, but execution was just bad. Man, Halloween Havoc had a tendency to just, any idea that they had would just go wrong. The immediate thing that comes to mind is when Hogan's supposed to do the flash paper.
Oh,
eyes, and it just like blows up in his hands, and people are just laughing at him, and the match was fucking terrible. And Horace Hogan shows up, and I'm just like, oh my god, like what, just awful.
Yeah, I remember watching that live because that was one of the pay per views we did get because we were both super pumped to see Warrior and Hogan again. Of all like the WCW pay per views that me and my brother got, they were probably some of the worst. You know, most of them were like because of who was in it. It was like, you know, Rodman and Hogan against Malone and DDP, Jay Leno and DDP against Hogan and whoever, and
yeah,
Warrior versus Hogan, and
yeah, that Road Wild pay per view was bad.
But I do remember the Jay Leno like thing that he did on his show where he's being trained by Kidman on how to do moonsaults and stuff, and it clearly it's somebody else in a Jay Leno wig, and it was actually
Kidman in the Jay Leno wig.
Oh, okay, it was funny though. I did enjoy that. But
what a mark.
Well, at the time, no, I have no desire to ever go back and watch any of those pay-per-views that I just mentioned there. But
well, now you can because I gave you access.
Yes, I could if I so desire to watch Halloween Havoc with Warrior and Hogan, I could do that right now if I want.
Oh, man. I remember that DDP Goldberg match actually being pretty good for what it was. I mean, Goldberg had his limitations, and I always think back to he had him up. Like, he was going to suplex him, and then DDP rolled around, gave him a diamond cutter, and everyone's like, DDP's going to win. And honestly, I feel like he should have been the one.
I think straight, so, too. It
should have ended right there, because DDP was hot at the time. Goldberg was, too, but you could have put the strap on him. And
then you had a brand new feud going with those two.
Yeah.
You know? I feel like it's such a bad idea to have two baby faces against each other. Like, why? If you book it right.
Yeah.
We'll
just have Kevin Nash win the Battle Royal, and then Scott Hall help him out, and then a week later, finger poke of doom. It's like, no wonder they fucking ran out of business. I wish I could have been in
your house when you saw that.
Oh, man, the finger poke, man. I was sitting there, and I'm like, are you fucking kidding? Because even at that point, and you could see it in the numbers, the NWO had ran its course. Why are we bringing it back? And then after that phased out, they fucking did it again in 2000 with Bret Hart. I loved WCW. But I think when I look back on it, more than anything, I loved the undercard and the midcard. Yeah. All the main event stuff, yes, they got the mainstream people back into wrestling again. But for me, the NWO worked best 96. 97. They drug that Sting stuff out probably longer than they needed to, but I ate that up. I think that was a cool thing. It's like, is Sting here tonight? Is he going to show up? Is he going to drop from the rafters? We don't know. And then he shows up at the end. He's beating the shit out of him. Siobhan's like, oh, we're out of time. We got to go.
Yeah.
We're
out of time. We'll learn that Nitro.
Yeah. And that was cool, but it ran its course. They ran it into the ground.
Just like so many great things, all great things get ran into the ground sometimes. You know, they take a great idea and they just keep thinking, let's milk it. And then when, it just ran its course here, people, and no one ever takes responsibility for what. Do you ever stop and wonder why it ran its course? It's like any great idea, if you just don't, I don't know. I feel like you could really make things straight. I mean, obviously, you want to meet the demand of the public.
But that's why I feel like some of the best TV shows and cartoons and things that we do enjoy are some of those ones that didn't last that long.
Yeah.
Because had they gone on any longer, then it probably would have lost its luster.
Yeah, well, the animation would have changed, the voice actor would have gotten changed up, or the stories would have gotten lame or more campy and silly. Plus, people had more original ideas back then, and they weren't afraid to take chances on stuff. It's just like they kind of felt like the, you know, action adventure cartoons were a hot commodity back in the 80s and 90s, and it's just that's not the issue anymore. It's not what they're putting towards kids, and they're saying kids clearly don't want that, but then they turn up for all the superhero movies. So I'm like, okay, well, I think there's something missing here, people. Unless they do like a really lame-ass version of Ultimate Spider-Man. God, blow my brains out.
Yeah.
But
you gonna go see that End of the Spider-Verse film or whatever?
No. I was kind of intrigued. Kinda in the most kinda sense. But after seeing the last trailer for it, I'm like, oh no, not at all. It's a schluck fest. It's just jokes, and I did think it was kind of cool to have Peter Porker the Spider-Ham show up in it. But I don't like who's voicing Spider-Man. He looks like a drunk in the movie. I mean, I had no problem with with Miles Morales being
Spider-Man. He looks as hungover as I do.
Now you look a lot more clean and sober than Peter Parker does in that movie. I was intrigued at first by the idea, but not like by any means excited. But no, after the last trailer, it's like, no, I'm not seeing that.
It could be better than Venom. Yeah, just give it a chance, man.
Well, I think just by watching the trailer alone, I'm like, you know, I'm sure it's better than Venom, hands down. But it doesn't mean I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, God, I mean, I cannot stress how bad that movie was. I mean.
But yeah, we'll get into it tomorrow.
Oh, man, it was so bad. It really was.
I'll be on Retro at 2 p.m.
You really just don't think they're going to really make it, but.
I didn't think it was going to be that bad. You know what? It exceeded my expectations.
I knew it was going to be really, really bad. Like, I mean, bad, bad, bad. I mean, like Ghost Rider bad. You know, Catwoman bad. Daredevil bad.
What was it? Was it Ghost Rider bad?
Yeah. Oh,
cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
I can't wait to Redbox it.
And you'll do it, too. And you're like, why did I do this? Why did I waste 2 hours of my time watching this, of watching Tom Hardy eat a lobster for jokes and funny? And it's funny because, you know, he's got a parasite in him. He just wants to eat stuff. Oh, he's hungry. He's still hungry. He's hungry. I got a parasite, man. I got a parasite. I'm Tom Hardy. He sucks. God, he sucks so much. He sucks in everything.
Everything.
He's not memorable in anything I've seen him in. Except Mad Max. He was good in Mad Max.
Yeah, he was.
But that's it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like that's the way with most actors. Like, you gotta find something that works with them, but most of the time they just sort of get pigeonholed into something and people like it. It sucks. Like,
well, I feel like he probably thought his comedic take on Venom, and they all thought it was just, we're making this movie for people who've never read a comic book in their life, have never watched anything from the animated series, or don't know anything about the character other than they see it on t-shirts at your local Hot Topic, or on online or Facebook, or you go to Walmart and you see a generic Venom t-shirt. That's your audience, and that's what they made this movie for, because there's nobody in that theater that if they knew anything about Venom, because a guy I work with told me he went to go see it too, and he was describing it to one of my coworkers, and he was like, it's not like you're describing a really bad sitcom, and that's exactly what it was. It was a bad sitcom. It was like, you know, Eddie and the Parasite to quote him, because I thought that's a great way of describing, because that's what it was, and it shouldn't have been greenlit. It was, oh boy, it was bad.
I just sounds to me just another thing of Sony, just like we gotta get this out. We gotta rush this out. We gotta do
and
this.
It shows, and that this they still have the nerve to do a Black Cat Silver Sable, which I'm like, I don't think that movie would ever get off the ground anyway. And knowing that they're gonna try to do another one with Carnage, which I hope will not get made.
I don't know. It made enough money, right?
It made money, yes, but I just
it made enough. They'll do it. It's gonna happen.
Oh boy.
Well, I mean, shit, we don't even need to talk about that tomorrow now. You pretty much kind of just gave your review right there, more or less.
I mean, it was just a mess, and they really would throw stuff in there and just pretend like the audience, oh, well, they're not going to remember that. They're not going to remember that either. Oh, you remember how we said he's dying? Oh, he's not really dying now. You know, it was all over the place. They were really expecting the audience just to kind of sit there and just kind of drool and get all foam face.
Oh, comic books. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, look, there's Venom. It's funny. It's funny because it's Venom, and he's funny, you know, because that's what superheroes are. They're comedians, right? They tell jokes, right? They're joke makers. Yeah, they don't save anything. They just tell jokes all the time. Isn't it funny? Look at all that bad CGI. Oh, that's so funny. Tom Hardy eating a raw lobster, man. He's so funny the way he eats lobsters and keeps saying he's hungry and he talks like he's drunk and sitting in a dumpster for 5 months.
The CG was bad as well.
Everything was.
All right, I'll ask you this. Which Venom is better, Topher Grace or Tom Hardy?
Can I just hang myself instead?
You just pull a Craven, put the gun in your mouth.
Yeah, give me the gun already. Like, dude, you went from really bad to honestly...
Well, which one's worse, though? In your humble opinion?
Tom Hardy's.
Really?
Yeah.
Shit. That's saying something right there.
Because at least, God, at least with Spider-Man 3, Venom is portrayed. They're trying to.
wait.
God, it's like if I was going to be a public defender for Topher Grace's Venom, like, he's guilty, but, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Before you say that, it's like, even it was hard for you to muster the words. It's almost like you're just like you're about to just throw up.
Yeah, I'm start dry heaving here. At least their depiction of Venom was as a villain who was trying to kill Spider-Man.
Yeah, you heard it here first, everybody. Tyler thinks that Topher Grace's Venom is good.
No, I'm just kidding. Don't you dare spread that. No, they're both. I hated that movie when I first. I told Jordan, he dragged me to go see it too. I said, dude, it's going to suck. You know it's going to suck.
I almost walked out of that. The only reason that I stayed is because that was the first movie that I saw when they had built the new theater right there beside the mall.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, I'm excited to be in here. These seats and everything, like, this is awesome. Finally, stadium seating near us. We don't have to drive further away. I almost walked out, and honestly, it was during the dancing
thing. Oh God!
It was either that or when she's singing and he shows up to upstage and she like smacks him. I was like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know which one came first. It was probably when he's walking down that came first, and then all right, so that happened, and I was like groaning, and then that happened. I was like, oh God, I just want to leave because this is bad. This is
I did
really,
see
really
it
bad.
One and a half times in theaters. One and a half, because the second time, the girl I was dating at the time, like we you and I had just got back from the beach.
Yeah.
And she wanted to go to the drive-in just for the sake of going to the drive-in. I'm like, Spider-Man 3's playing. I'm like, oh. But what was great is that she got the mind. I was like, hey, let's go back and have sex instead. Let's, you know, skip the movie. And like, all right, let's go. So I'm like, you know what? It was a small price to pay to have to sit through Spider-Man 3 again. But, you know, about less than halfway through, we just got up and left and went on to bigger and better things.
Yeah. Speaking of shit that doesn't stand the test of time, those Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies do not. At all.
And I know there is a. I remember when the Garfield films came out, like there was like a kind of a a turn on those Raimi films, which I kind of feel like you guys are just now noticing this. Like, I know there are fans of those first two films, but I just feel like they're just not good films. Tobey Maguire looks like Spider-Man, but he can't be Spider-Man. He doesn't have the voice, and the story, all the villains were supposed to feel sorry for everyone. Even the Green Goblin, we're supposed to feel sorry for him at the end of the movie. You know, every villain we have to, like, oh man, the poor guy. I just want to give, Dr. Octopus a hug. You know, like, no, you don't do that with Spider-Man's villains. Not all of them. I mean, the Lizard is the first one that comes to mind, like, it's supposed to be a sympathetic villain, which he was portrayed very well in The Amazing Spider-Man, despite what others would say about the movie. But, yeah, they don't hold up. That not at all. And I think they all could have been good movies. Maybe.
Well, I think any movie could have been a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, because I think Alfred Molina looked the part of Dr. Octopus. I think he could have been a great menacing version, but instead we're supposed to feel sorry for him and he's supposed to be redeemable at the end of the movie.
Yeah, but his wife died, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. So sad. You know, and Green Goblin. Like, Willem Dafoe could have been a very, very good Green Goblin. But given bad dialogue and a goofy-looking suit, you know, it was doomed, you know. And I loved it when it first came out. I thought, this is wonderful. This is great. I've waited so long to see it. And, of course, like many others, comes out on video, and we're like, oh, no. It was just like Freddy versus Jason. It was like watching Daredevil. You're like, what was I thinking in theaters?
Oh, I always want to specify this again.
I knew the minute I said
it. Because I want, anytime he brings up Ben Affleck's Daredevil, I want everyone to know that when this film came out, he's like, it's better than Batman 89. The masses have to know that. He has since retracted that, but it was just funny to think.
It didn't take long to retract it either, because it was one of those things when you see on home video, you're like, I don't know what I was thinking when I saw that.
Soundtrack was cool. I liked the soundtrack a lot.
Soundtrack was okay, you know, and I guess at the time, you know, Michael Clark Duncan looked the part of Kingpin, and I think, you know, Ben Affleck has no business playing superheroes. He really doesn't. Colin Farrell sucks at everything. Jennifer Garner looked like a very hot Electra, but bad movie, bad dialogue. Everything was just bad about it, but I was so excited for Daredevil. I really was. I remember watching the teaser trailer, going to see Minority Report with a girl I was dating at the time. Just, you know, that's what you do. You go see bad movies to win over women. But at least when I saw Minority Report, I'm like, at least the teaser trailer for Daredevil is attached to this. And I remember it was like almost the movie starts playing. Well, wait, where's the teaser trailer? And then there was like a jump cut and the teaser trailer for Daredevil started playing. You know, so I almost felt like I was getting cheated out of seeing the teaser trailer for Daredevil, going to see a movie I did not care to see, and it sucked anyway. But when I saw the images for Daredevil, like, I remember being in going to one of the computer labs and looking up the images, like, oh man, this is gonna be so cool. You know, you live and learn. You realize, you know, not everything is as good when you first saw it, you know, and you have to man up about those kind of mistakes.
I mean, there's been a lot of things too that I've seen and didn't like initially, and then gone back and have since, like, you know what, I liked it. Like, Hellboy comes to mind. Remember when we saw that? I was like, I fucking hated it.
I didn't hate it. I was just kind of like, just not as. My brother loved it.
Well, and I went back and watched it. I'm like, you know what? Yeah, it's pretty good now.
Yeah,
but at the time, I was like, fuck this. But yeah. Daredevil, better than Batman 89. Tyler Baker.
Yeah, you keep hammering that in. It was a dark time in my life.
Well, any closing thoughts before we go ahead and wrap this up?
It's just, I'd say it's definitely, I would put this episode in probably the top 10 of the animated series. It wouldn't be in the top 5, but it would definitely easily be in the top 10 of the entire Batman animated series, because it's depicting a character that was given a big purpose in the comic books, and I think they depicted him very well and did it very honest. It didn't come off like other force. It just felt like they're going to do this. They did it right with a lot of care, precision. it's a 10 out of 10 episode. I mean, there's nothing to dislike about this episode at all.
I'm sure someone would have some nitpicks.
Of course, you know, it's, you got people who want to take, you know, nice soft serve dumps on Batman 89 because they carry that flag for the Nolan films. Because it was real, man. I choked up when Aaron Eckhart was like saying, "Dawn is darkest before the dawn," and da da da, and all those like bad actors. And no more bad cops. Like, God, like, I know it's a small part. Can we get a better actor to say some of these lines?
There's a lot of producers, families that
clearly
that need bit parts.
Oh man, all those every actor that's doing a bit part in all the Nolan films, they it's like nails on a chalkboard. Oh, it was just so. I'm like, am I the only one seeing this?
I mean, you don't like that that climactic. Will they blow up the other boat?
Oh, with all that wonderful acting, with just, you know, the craft services wife, and you know the executive producer's second cousin's former roommate, and oh man, it's like people. It's who directed this? You know. Did they let, you know, some guy's nephew direct those scenes?
Yeah.
Because, oh man.
I will honestly say this, aside from Heath Ledger's performance in Dark Knight, I would honestly say that Batman Begins is probably the best of the three. To me. Because they didn't know at the time like how it was gonna do. So I feel like once that performed well and the sequels came out, that's when it sort of took that and sort of like blew it up. And it's like, oh, well, we're going to do this, this, and this. Like, at least with Batman Begins, it does feel very basic and grounded a lot more than the other ones.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. No, I kind
of
feel like the first one is, even though they try to be real in certain parts, but I feel like they still maintain that sense of this is a comic book. Not everything has got to be in the real world here, people.
Yeah.
You know, whereas with the sequels, I kind of feel like, well, Dark Knight Rises, like all bets are off because the Dark Knight made so much money. Do whatever you want. Here's some money, Nolan. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
With no restrictions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Dark Knight, it was all about, you know, making statements and showing how smart we are and, like, no, I just don't care. Whereas the Batman Begins, it was fun to see, you know, Bruce training. And I did like a lot of that stuff. But again, you have a lot of just stuff I still to this day have problems with. Scarecrow, I like Cillian Murphy as Scarecrow. I thought he was great. I wanted more from Ra's al Ghul, even though at the time I thought Liam Neeson was great as Ra's al Ghul. Ra's al Ghul, I've heard it pronounced so many different ways. But, you know, there are some pros to it. I'd be stupid to say that there was absolutely nothing good in those films, even to this day. That's a little narrow-minded. But, no, I just don't have that desire to go back and revisit those films. I just don't.
Yeah, because they're well-made films, but they're just not fun.
No.
That's like the balance that you need, and I guess that's why we kind of hold these cartoons in higher regard.
Well,
but
I've been going, and after Daredevil season 3 dropped, I've watched it, and I've gone back to rewatch season 1. I'm just going to watch all three of them back to back again in unison. And you look at that, and you know, like, you watch the fight sequences in that show, you can clearly tell what is going on in all those fights. It's not, I mean, because it's like Christopher Nolan had no idea how to shoot a fight sequence. It's just a jumble mess of edit, jump cut. It was just a mess of like, what is going on here? And it doesn't flow. It doesn't look cool. And you watch that and like, they're doing all this stuff in camera. You know, it was just like, they're well choreographed. You got great music. And the tone is consistent. There's very little humor even throughout Daredevil, all three seasons. You've got such great moments. Of course, granted, too, they have a lot of time to spread out and stretch out characters. So
That's why I think for the most part now, this stuff works better in a way where you don't have the restrictions of cable TV and networks. You know, like with Netflix, you can say shit and fuck or whatever you want, really, and keep it, like, if that's what the character needs, and the characters, you know, if it calls. So I think it works better in just an episodic form like that, and not.
And I think if we were to get, you know, any, I mean, I know DC's doing the whole streaming thing, but you know what? If you're going to do another Batman, I kind of feel like, you know what? Maybe that's what they need to do to kickstart the streaming service. Not Teen Titans, but a new Batman. A Batman where you have time to really build up the world, and you don't have to do the whole how he became Batman thing. It's not really an interest of mine.
At this point, I feel like with the main characters, that anytime we're doing anything new going forward, we don't need origin stories anymore. We've seen it time and time and time and time again. Just jump into some randomness. And
Well, that's what makes Batman 89 that much great too. Is that he's already been Batman, but he's been Batman for a brief time. Like the word is getting around that there's a bat in Gotham City, but people don't know what it is. So you almost feel like Michael Keaton has been doing it for real long, to the point where they don't know what he is. They don't know if he's human or not. So you just kind of jumping in after he's just kind of gotten started. You know, like that's what I kind of feel like. That's a good jumping point. You know, and you know, I think it would give a lot of time to build up the crime lords of Gotham with having Two-Face established, or Black Mask and Joker coming into the mix, Catwoman. I mean, you'd have so much time to develop a back-and-forth love story between Batman and Catwoman, with the gangs and crime lords fighting over control of Gotham, and Joker just decides to come in and just blow it all up just for fun, you know. And that's what makes Daredevil, God, it's...
I need to watch season 3. The main hiccup there is Emily hasn't watched any of it yet.
The more reason to go just start from the beginning and rewatch season 1, because it's flying by for me, and I'm watching season 1 with new eyes again. Like it blew my mind when I first saw it. Now I feel like I'm seeing something even more better this time around.
Yeah, I'm thinking either that or just wait until she goes to sleep and I'll just start it.
Which should be any moment now.
Yeah, probably. Her narcolepsy will kick in. There we go.
Yes. But it's definitely worth revisiting. And when I'm watching that, I'm like, oh, man, why can't the Marvel stuff be like this?
Nah.
Like, it's serious. It's not blood and guts. But you know what? People are getting beaten up, broken bones.
And there is humor in it, but it's just very, like...
It's very, very... it's like a small sprinkle over 13 episodes. The tone is consistent, and you grow to care and like these characters. Even to the point where, like, you feel sorry for Kingpin at times, but you know he's a douchebag. You know, there's nothing likable about it. He has his moments, but that's what makes it fun and interesting. But you know this guy's a real prick. That this guy is just going to do, he's going to, you know, he's a bad dude. And I like that about it, though.
Yeah.
But, I can't wait till I wrap this one up and start season 2 again and rewatch that because that was the definitive version of the Punisher. We will not get any, unless Punisher season 2 decides, oh, you know what? We really screwed the pooch with talking about, you know, post-traumatic stress for 13 episodes. And let's give the people what they want, an actual show where the Punisher punishes.
Because I didn't go and watch Punisher, because honestly I've only watched the 2 seasons of Daredevil and just like a couple episodes of the other shows. I'm just like, they didn't really hold my attention the way Daredevil did. So and it's starting to show, and it's getting kind of weird because they canceled Luke Cage, they canceled Iron Fist.
Mm-hmm. They were not as well received for the most part. It's
But do you think this is also a thing where, since Disney is starting their streaming service and all the Marvel stuff is going to be like all the Marvel movies will be going to that instead of Netflix going forward when that gets started? Do you think this is sort of a power play move of like, well, these things are going to transition there as well? Or do you think those will stay on Netflix?
I remember Netflix had released a statement saying that they had no plans to cancel Daredevil or Jessica Jones. Like, those were the two they said that as of right now they plan to continue on with. Those they're not officially greenlit for next seasons, but obviously Daredevil season 3 clearly is, you know, what's coming for the fourth season if it does get greenlit. I watched a video recently where they were saying that there wasn't much buzz for Daredevil season 3, and I also, if you want to say, I blame it on the fact that it just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I don't recall, like, when season 2 came out and they were having the Punisher and Elektra in it, it was all over the place. It was just, and Daredevil's in the suit Kingpin's back. I mean, it was just like you could. It was so everyone was aware of that. Right. Whereas this one, it just kind of felt like it just kind of came out of nowhere. And, oh, here's season three, comes out next month. It wasn't a whole lot of, because when you watch it, you know, it really sets up the good stuff for what season four could be about. This is the season three, I think, is the most character driven and psychologically driven of the seasons that we've got. It's great. It's fantastic, but it's different from the other two, but in a different perspective. Like it's still great. I mean, it's like, wow, this is really good, but different from the other two. But I just kind of feel like that. I almost feel like they didn't release a whole lot to kind of get it hyped up. It kind of almost felt, it felt like to me it was under the radar. Maybe it's just because I just didn't see enough about it for it to really generate a whole lot of buzz. But, you know, I really hope we at least get one more season. And then after that, they don't want to greenlight another one, fine. But I kind of feel like we should get one last season to send it off with four straight seasons of what you would want from a Daredevil show. And we have yet to get, what we're left with is like, we have to finish it off with that. So, but yeah, it just makes me wish that more stuff was like the Daredevil show. Really, I mean, even though I can't argue three great seasons, you can't argue with what we got. So I just wish that more superhero stuff was treated with more dignity and respect instead of, you know, let's get some more lighthearted humor in here because the audience is going to get bored if they don't have something to laugh at.
I like when I imagine people come into this like they do every week. It's like, well, they got the commentary, but we gave you a whole hell of a lot more too.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's never the intention. It's just kind of what happens naturally.
Well, and part of me is just poking the bear. It's just like, oh, hey, you saw Venom, huh? Tell me all about it. Did it suck? Yeah.
God, it's not fun being mad at all this stuff. It's yeah, really not.
I mean, that's your kind of your gimmick now to the masses. Like, well, he's angry a lot. He doesn't like things.
And it's like, it's not like I'm like 50 years old. It's like, it was better back in my day. I'm like, I just don't like the way people make movies anymore.
Yeah, but it's almost kind of like that gap. Like I've said before, man, like even people 10 years younger than us, it just seems like a complete generational gap.
Well, obviously there are but I also feel like, you know what? Not everybody looks at movies and cartoons and TV shows the way I do. Like I'm looking for things that most people, that's not the interest of theirs because it's just entertainment and that's nothing more. But to me, it's grown. It's resonated more with me. There are certain reasons why certain Arnold films and Van Damme films and Stallone films and superhero films resonate with me even today because of these reasons. And when I find that kind of storytelling and choreography is lacking in these films, I'm like, yes, I'm going to call it out because I felt like you can do better. A lot of them could do better, you know? But when something like Guardians of the Galaxy comes along and they put all that humor into it and they realize, well, hey, this was a hit and we just did a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
Maybe this could work with all the other Marvel movies. And
yeah. Then that's kind of the bummer. Like with Guardians, yes, it works and pertains to that. Same thing with Deadpool. Like, yes, it works and pertains to that character. It's not going to work for everybody, but
no, you can't have that in Infinity War. And that's what it was. It was just, you saw it, and we don't need to go down that path again, but it's just another
we need not bring up Infinity War nor Steven Seagal.
I got no problem talking about Steven Seagal.
No, I'm just saying it's like you have that as kind of like your hot button thing. Joe has Seagal. I guess common sense would be like my hot button thing. I was thinking about that while I was showering. I was just like thinking about shit in the news and thinking about like shit I've heard people at work say. And I'm like, where's the common sense?
I kind of feel like that's lacking in a lot of stuff, though. I mean, if from movies and stuff, like, there's no common sense here. Everything is just throw stuff out there, and they'll love it. It'd be great.
Yeah, and meanwhile, we're just sitting there like, God damn you, God damn you, which is a tease for our episode tomorrow. Pumpkinhead and Rawhead Rex. Tyler, I know you're excited about Rawhead Rex. Oh, I can feel it.
I'm going to force myself to watch it tonight at some point.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it tonight as well.
Mm. What makes it even more, it's like Joe hasn't even seen the movie in like 30-some years. Like, well, hey, I hope I remember it.
No, I provided that. I sent you guys that YouTube link.
I know,
so
I know you did, but it was just one of those things where like
Joe's here right now. So Joe, you You better refresh yourself, sir. I don't want any of this.
Well, I don't
want
to carry this episode of the podcast.
I remember when I rented it from the fish store. And
I don't remember anything else.
I'm just waiting for something to pop up over there in the chat now, because he was the only one that said anything this time around.
Man.
No. We got a couple people in here, but
okay.
Joe's the only one typing in the chat, which with this show, honestly, doesn't really. I've said it before. We've talked about it. Like that's a thing that
doesn't warrant having people listen to us live.
We don't have to have people here live. I mean, we encourage it. It's always cool. But yeah, I guess we should go ahead and wrap this thing up. But Joe, thanks for popping in and joining us. Any of you guys that are new to the channel, make sure that you hit subscribe and ring the bell so you get notified when we go live. Check the links down below, beyondretropodcast.com. It'll take you to Pop Culture Network's page for our show. We do that every Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern. So if you guys want to join us live, we always got a handful of guys in there chatting up, talking about either the topics that we're discussing on the show, or sometimes they're just sort of conversing amongst themselves and laughing at Tyler along the way. Yeah. Check out our Facebook page. Give that a like. That way you get all the updates for any of the stuff that you may have missed. Check out Podbean. Got a link down there if you want to go ahead and give everything a download. Take us on the road. Trying to think of just some of the other stuff. I mean, we got Joe's Custom Creations. If you want to hit him up for a custom action figure, check out his t-shirts. He's got some designs up there. I think that other than the iTunes thing, if you want to find us on there, just a keyword, Pop Culture Network. That'll give you access to Capes, Commentaries, Beyond Retro, and Fans of Power, the dedicated He-Man, the Master of the Universe podcast, hosted by this buff dude here. And the guy that's been lurking in the chat for the last half hour, Joe Amato. Anything else that you got?
Pretty much covered it, man.
Yeah. Don't feel as strong about that outro. I think it's because
by this point, we're how many episodes in, and people don't quite understand at this point. Then
if you don't get that, sometimes I flub it up, and I'm hungover when we do these things, because I kind of woke up with a little bit of a headache because I had to work an extra hour last night, so I got home later, and I'm like, well, I need to stay up later, so, and I slept less and drank a little more, so
it's really imbalanced. I mean, he really comes off like Tom Hardy in Venom.
Yeah, just been sitting in a dumpster all night.
Yeah,
was that really a gag?
No, that's anything? Just
kind of, oh, that was just your description.
That's how he looked and acted in the movie.
Okay.
It was like someone who'd been drunk sitting in a dumpster for 5 months with nothing coherent to say, just acted like almost like you just saw Johnny Depp in Pirates of the Caribbean. He's really kind of all over the place and weird. That's what Venom needs. That's what I'm going to do, you know, and that's what we got. That's number one comedy in America. Go see Venom today, people.
Man, well, I guess with that, we will see you guys next time on Capes and Commentaries.